There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on a Monday. Fresh week to work with. Glad you're here. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. And, of course, you can check out this show and the 54 hours a week of live local programming we do in podcast form. If you'll go to fmtalk1065.com, click the podcast tab, or better yet, subscribe at iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify, TuneIn Radio, pretty much every podcast platform out there. We're available on, so subscribe and get those shows right there on your phone and, you know, listen to them when you're ready. I mean, you might be not doing yard work till this afternoon, and boom, you could be listening to Bill Finch and playing Gardening for the Gulf Coast to keep you motivated through that. So just remember that, and you can also share those podcasts with your friends and family. All right, lots to do on today's show, and in hour number two, we'll get into some of the Mardi Gras questions that continue to plague our discussions here going forward when it comes to COVID and Mardi Gras. We'll get into that. Also, we'll talk a bit about the story that, well, from over the weekend, from last week through over the weekend, the sheriff's tree, the Christmas tree with the pictures of the folks that had warrants on them. We'll get into that. The latest here, there has been a change on it. But we open up this hour with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, and a lot to talk about with the Congressman. Thanks for your time. Thanks for being here.
It's good to be with you, Sean.
It's good to have you on the phone and talk about what is or is not happening right now in Washington. Now, I asked you probably 25 times leading up to the election when we were going to get something done on, and I'll just call it CARES Act 2, and you can correct me on the right language, but you said, well, wait till after the election. All right, so after the election, there's some movement, but what exactly is the movement on in the House right now for a CARES Act bill?
So last week, a group of senators and House members from both parties put forth a proposed compromise deal that tops out a little more than $900 billion. And, you know, Pelosi, for the longest time, was stuck at $2-point-something trillion. The president actually offered a $1.8 trillion, and she wouldn't take it. Well, post-election, she's now pushing this $900 billion bill. And she's been having conversations with Senator McConnell, and her staff have been having conversations. And I'm not in those conversations, but from what I'm being told, they are making some progress. So I think there's a pretty good chance that sometime between now and Christmas, we're going to get a bill, and we'll be able to vote it and get something done before we have to leave for the holidays.
I want to get into the red herrings in this in just a little bit, but let's talk about things important to most people. Now, let's talk first of all about PPP. This is something you've talked about with us several times here. What about PPP? Are we looking at extensions, new funding? Is it part of this bill?
Oh yeah, I think the one thing we've got a lot of consensus on is PPP. So. And we not only not need to put more money into it, but there are all sorts of restrictions we've got on it now. There's some issues that we've left hanging about how people get their forgiveness. Mm-hmm. So I think we would all like to get all that straightened there and make sure that PPP program continues to work. And it's worked very well to protect a lot of jobs in America. The real sticking point, Sean, is still this amount of money that Pelosi wants to give to state and local governments. And as you start out, she wanted $1 trillion or more than that for state and local governments. And in this compromise bill, it's down to $150 billion. But here's the point that I and others have been making. Why are we sending them more money when they can't spend the money we sent them on?
Right, right. Help me with that. Help me understand that.
Well, I've told you all along that the reason she wants to do this is that we've got blue states and blue cities out there that have mismanaged themselves both before and during this pandemic. and they want us to bail out their poor decision-making. Alabama, the state of Alabama, ended its fiscal year September 30 in the black, okay? Didn't have a deficit. Now, I'm sure they would like to have had more money than they had, and they would have had it if the economy hadn't been thrown into the hole for a while. But I can tell you, there's not a whole lot of appetite on our side to just keep throwing money at these state and local governments around the country, not like Alabama, that have been so mismanaged. So I think that's going to be the big sticking point.
But, you know, I saw the, I guess, press release came out last week, and the governor's office here was saying, well, they would get it spent before the end of the year. But it seems like with the pressure, and not saying there's not good programs are being funded, but maybe we are finding ways to spend the money that we wouldn't, and I'm just talking about Alabama, and then we can apply to other states, that we wouldn't if it didn't have that deadline or if there was an extension. Because I worry with the number of cases rising right now for COVID and corona, here we are trying to get this money spent where it, to me, would be a better deal to just let the states have 3 more months or 6 more months or something to see what happens here till the vaccine, you know, makes a difference.
Well, that is the position a lot of us have, is that we should just let them take some of the time and other restrictions on the money they've already got and say, look, you don't have those restrictions anymore. Spend it as you feel like you need to deal with the effects, direct and indirect, of this disease. So that is a part of the discussion. But in addition to that, Pelosi wants us to send out another $150 billion. We sent out $125 billion to the state and local governments back in March or April. And as of today, they still haven't spent a big chunk of it. We're going to give them an extra $25 billion, you know, $150 billion instead of $125 billion. And how long is it going to take for them to figure out how to spend that? Now, we have some limitations on it right now. I want to take off. But I'm just not convinced that they need the money. I'm just not.
Right. I don't know what next year looks like for those states or here. It just seems like if you throw another tranche of money even bigger than the first one, and now you have a Biden administration, there may be some creative problem solving in some of those states, right? For reasoning of why those states or why those blue counties and cities are in a deficit, and then they define it and say, oh, look, that money can be applied to this.
Oh, they'll let them use it for whatever they want to use it for, and that's the way it's going to work. I mean, Democrats just believe spending money is good in and of itself. But, you know, one of the worst parts about this is that it enables these governors and mayors in these blue areas to continue to make decisions about how they are opening or not opening their society and their economy. And we're just enabling their bad decision making. I mean, if you go look at the unemployment rate in New York for October, which is the latest numbers we've got, the unemployment numbers in October for Alabama. Alabama's unemployment rate is, you know, a little more than half as big as New York's. It's because we've made better decisions. Why would we enable New York to make bad decisions?
Well, let's talk about this other part. When I mentioned this morning, just looking through the bit I had, I said, well, there's going to be renewed federal assistance, right, for unemployment, that additional, I think, $300 a week. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's what I understand, yes.
Okay, because we saw that last time. I mean, that's one of the places, if somebody lost a job through no fault of their own, I see taking care of those people to get them back on their feet. But people back here in Alabama, business owners said, hey, you do that and you add that to the state stuff, then people have no incentive to go back to work.
Yeah, and if you drive around, and I have been driving around, just like a lot of people, doing some shopping, I see lots of help wanted signs, now hiring signs, retail, restaurants, you name it. So the jobs are out there, and we don't want to disincentivize people from going out and getting the work that's out there. So the idea behind $300, what it was before was $600 a week.
Right.
This would reduce it down to $300 a week, which the whole idea there, I think, is to try to get it under what people want minimum wage to be as sort of an incentive for people to get back to work. So, I mean, that part may actually be one of the less controversial parts. Another big controversy from the Democrats' point of view in that bill and in McConnell's bill is liability protection, which he's been talking about, I've been talking about, a lot of people have been talking about for months now, because how can you expect businesses to open if they open and all they're doing is opening themselves up to a lawsuit because a customer claims they got COVID when they walked into business? I mean, how would you ever be able to prove that? But I mean, it's liability protection, I think, is a legitimate part of this discussion.
Yeah, I mean, it's not we've talked about this, and I don't have the legal training, obviously you do, but I don't think you could prove that in the court of law. But that scares the heck out of a small business or you know, retail operation that would have to spend a lot of money and a lot of time defending that and not being able to run their business. So, yeah, I think that liability issue for business and, you know, to some degree at a local or regional government level, I think decisions are made. I just feel, I don't know for a fact, but I think decisions are made for schools, decisions are made for municipalities, different things because of that, you know, the sword of Damocles up there they believe could fall at any time for liability.
Oh, I think that's correct. You know, there's a group of lawyers out there that have made a fortune off of preying on these school systems with particularly these lawsuits over special education students. I can just see, you know, band of lawyers saying, all right, now we're going to make a bunch of money off of these schools, suing them because they brought kids back to school when it wasn't safe. Good Lord. I mean, you know, where does that end? We have to have liability protection to give the incentive to businesses, et cetera, to open back up. And until we do, I think there are going to be businesses going to say, I'm taking the risk. I'm just not. I'll go out of business. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll take that risk.
Yeah, the other question here, and I see it coming in on the text line, it did this morning, was what was not in this latest CARES Act, the CARES Act 2, and that is the individual checks, right, the $1,200. Is that what you're looking at now?
What I'm hearing, they don't have stimulus checks in this bill. It has been a moving target, so they may have added it since I last talked to somebody about it. But it's my understanding they do not have stimulus checks in there. But, you know, this is a moving target. This is very much a work in progress, and I could say that. And you know, later this afternoon, they could announce, oh, we put it in there. So stay tuned as they negotiate it. But this is a very serious negotiation. This is not the little pantomime we were going back through in August and September and October and November. This is the real thing. And so as you get to the real thing, things will start popping, and I predict you're going to see some changes to what we've been talking about over the course of the next 3 or 4 days.
Text question here. Is there anything in the bill about student loan relief? Do you know?
Well, my understanding is that they will extend the not the fact that you owe the money, but extend the time you have to pay it.
Okay.
So that, you know, everybody's had relief from having to make those payments in the last several months. They'll just extend it sometime into next year.
All right. So the other part of this discussion is what I'm hearing today is and late last week was, well, there's the CARES Act 2 thing, but there's a lot to talk about here with whether you can own a tiger or not and whether you can smoke marijuana while you do it. Explain this.
We're in the middle of a generation-defining pandemic. We're in the worst season for the pandemic, and the two pieces of legislation we were called to Washington to vote on last week was a bill to legalize pot and a bill to make it more difficult for people to have big animals like tigers and lions. Just silliness. Neither bill going anywhere in the Senate. Sort of the leitmotif of this year. That's what we do. We just show up and vote on stuff that's not going anywhere and waste a lot of time. I mean, it's very disappointing we were called up for that. Now, tomorrow afternoon, we will vote on the National Defense Authorization Act. It has been worked out in conference. So that's a significant bill. That's a reason to be there and be doing good stuff. I do anticipate, by the way, that tomorrow a bill will pass in the House by unanimous consent that will rename the post office in Fairhope after Jack Edwards. I do think that's
really
going to pass tomorrow. Yeah.
Good. That's good news. Good news. I know there's some. There are things that may not. It's not to say they don't have a priority, but they. Like you said, in the pandemic, because the discussion of I would like to hear the debate on taking marijuana off the federal registry or keeping it on, but or enforcing the law in states by state. I think that's a fair discussion. But as you said, here's the problem: it seems mute. It seems like Washington's deaf when that discussion's happening and people are trying to figure out how they're going to keep their business open, whether they are, what they're going to do with their children. I mean, whether the kids can go back to school.
Yeah. Well, we've been going through this since the end of July, and you know it's been silly. I mean, if you're going to be serious-minded about it, and they're being serious-minded about this pandemic bill now, But if we had been serious-minded about it this back in July, we could have had this done before we broke for the August recess. We should have had this done before we broke for the August recess. And then they had that silly little game during the August recess. Well, you're on 24 hours notice to come back. Well, trust me, I didn't plan anything over the month of August that took that seriously because I knew they weren't going to do it. But now they are. Now we're going to get a bill. It may not be a bill that I like everything in. But we need to do something. Everybody knows we need to do something. We just need to get it done.
All right. And before we wrap up here, vaccine and something we talked about this morning on the show is, you know, Alabama was going to get, I think, like 112,000 doses, and then it was down to half that or less. What are you hearing in Washington for the rollout for us here in Alabama? What should we expect?
Well, what's happening is that the producers of these two vaccines are having supply chain troubles, which you talk to anybody in industry right now, everybody's having supply chain problems. And so there's an effort to try to use the resources of the federal government to try to get through those supply chain problems. And I think that will actually happen, but will it happen in time enough for us to move things a little more quickly before the end of the year? Probably not. So, you know, we've always had all along the priority was frontline health care workers first and foremost. And I've got a sister-in-law that falls in that category. She's an ICU nurse at Thomas Hospital. I mean, we need them to be vaccinated so they're not afraid to go to work. So they're first. And second are people who are in nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and the like, because they're the most at-risk people in our society. They're the ones who, if they get this disease, very difficult for them to withstand what the disease does to their body. So that's who we'll get it next. So we have a priority system in place, and I think that's what we're going to follow. I still believe that by July the 1st, this thing will be broadly out there enough to where just about anybody could get it. And that will change next school year, next football season. It'll probably be in time enough to make sure we have a pretty good summer season at the beach, et cetera. But you just can't ramp up the production of something like this and maintain the quality and then get it out there in the way that you can administer it appropriately. It just takes a while to get up to that point. And remember, we have never, ever, ever gotten the vaccine for a virus anywhere near this quick. Mm-hmm. We got this in less than a year, and it usually takes 3 to 5 years. I don't want to sound too impatient about it because I know the miracle we've worked to get to where we are.
No, it is. I wonder on the – just one last thought here on the flip side of that, just to go on the other side. Now we have ubiquity with the vaccine. It's everywhere, and then people don't take it. Do you see coming from the federal level incentive or compulsion for people to take the vaccine?
Well, I don't think that government has the power to compel you to take a vaccine. I mean, if somebody tried that, if Biden or somebody tried that, I think that a court would probably stop that. I don't see that. I have heard this proposal from a former colleague of mine named John Delaney, a member from Maryland, that John's proposing paying people to take the vaccine. That's a little funny. I think what we got to do is do a better job of communicating to people and explain to them that the vaccine is safe and that it is effective. And why in the world in this environment would anybody choose not to take a safe and effective vaccine? Now, I know there's some people out there who are anti-vaxxers. I know that. But this is America. We have the FDA. They are the gold standard for this sort of thing around the world. If the FDA approves it as safe and effective, I think we are all smart to take it. And if a broad group of us doesn't take it, then that harms the rest of us because we can't fully reopen without it. So we have got to do a better job of communicating to people that once this thing's approved by the FDA, they can have confidence it's both safe and effective.
Well said. All right, Congressman, we appreciate your time. I know a lot going on in Washington right now, and y'all will break for Christmas when? When's the date?
We don't know. We were supposed to break this Friday. Uh-huh. The House was. In the Senate the following Friday, but we got word this morning that the funding bill is not ready, the funding the government for the rest of the fiscal year, and that we're going to pass a continuing resolution this week to carry it into either next week or, God forbid, the week after Christmas. But the only good news about that is that should be just one vote. So you come in and you vote and you go home. I hope that's the case. But if you've watched Nancy Pelosi run the floor on the House of Representatives, you would have so little confidence in all of what I just said.
Congressman, I appreciate your frankness, and we'll check back with you soon.
Thanks. Good to talk to you, Sean.
As always, Congressman Bradley Byrne joining us, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:28, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Monday style. Hey, y'all, I'm Sean. I'd like to talk with you when we come back from the news break. 343-0106, 343-0106 on the telephone line, on the text line here. A named texter says, you can't have it both ways. Either the virus is a real pandemic or it's not. No need to wear the mask, and it's only like the flu. How long did we hear that and that it wasn't real? President Trump tells us not to trust the deep state. Reading comprehension may not have been good on that. So you're saying, let's see, having it both ways. Maybe it's that question I had this morning about it being medium. In other words, I believe the coronavirus is a real thing, right? It's a real thing. But is something like that the reason you would shut down entire economies and have everybody not go to school? I don't think so. I don't think it lives up to that by the nature of the rate of fatality from it. But we can talk about that. We'll come back. 343-0106. News is next, plus Dr. Bill's forecast.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile, Monday style. Beautiful day outside. What I can see here from the, through the windows at the studio. Looks good. More from Dr. Bill coming up. All right, right now let's check in with my buddy Larry Kirby at LCM. Fresh week to work with, and I know inventory is the key. That's why I asked Larry, how's it looking?
It's looking good. Matter of fact, it's such a beautiful day. I've got something out here to make you look good riding around in this afternoon. We got a Camaro RS convertible.
Oh, my. Okay, do tell.
Red. No.
Red convertible Camaro. That sounds like, if I can get some mirrored sunglasses, I got the look.
We probably got some around somewhere.
let's talk about that. Because, we always, you and I end up talking by default a lot about trucks and, different SUVs out there, which are obviously bread and butter. But y'all get those oh wow vehicles as well at LCM.
Oh, absolutely. We go with the sports cars, we get them frequently. Camaros are real hot sellers, and so are Mustangs. As a matter of fact, we had 3 Mustangs last week. We don't have any this week, so we're out trying to buy some more.
All right. So that means that you have the vehicles people are looking for. Do you have the financing options that they're looking for?
Absolutely. We've got great financing. The credit unions are really, really aggressive. It's a great, great rate.
All right. Tell folks how to find you, to look at the inventory, and talk financing.
Come see us at the corner of Highway 90 and Plantation Road. Visit us online at lcmmotorcars.com. Like us on Facebook or just call us at 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
All right. Larry Kirby checking in from LCM. What about that? I mean, the Camaro, if I could have like the third vehicle, like I always got to have a truck. And I mean, really always have to have a truck. I don't know if I could live without having a pickup. But if I could have like a weekend vehicle, like the third vehicle, drop top Camaro, come on now. It's what I need. It's exactly, I know there's somebody probably at home rolling their eyes right now. It's exactly what I need. All right, grab some calls here at 343-0106, 343-0106. Also, coming up in the show, we'll get into some more Mardi Gras talk and also the, what are we even calling it now? It was the thug Christmas tree that started all the discussion with the Sheriff's Department. We'll get to that. By the way, too, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest, tomorrow on Midday Mobile. So tune in for that. All right, first up, David in Mobile. Hey, David.
Hey, Sean, first of all, the coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic is a real virus and a real pandemic.
Yep.
I know that there's been some discussion on that this morning on your station.
Yeah, there was something like that, some kind of discussion.
Yeah. It is a mutation of the SARS-1 virus, which is what happened back in the Obama administration. Which is one of the reasons why we were able to move so quickly on the vaccine this time around, is because a lot of the groundbreaking work was done back then when that pandemic started to emerge and then it just petered out. That's a different discussion, but leads me to my concern about why so many people might not take the virus vaccine is because of the cost. I think the Pfizer one is about $1,300, $1,300 vaccine, and the Moderna one is somewhere in that same price range. Who's going to pay that money?
Didn't we talk about that? I thought the health insurers were going to step up. I thought it was. Yeah, I didn't think people were slapping leather for that, if I remember that discussion correctly.
Well, what about the people that don't have health insurance and don't have an employer that's going to be willing to fork out that kind of money to pay for it?
Well, that seems like a great place for a state to be able to spend its CARES Act 1 money, let alone CARES Act 2, huh?
I agree, and I think that there needs to be some sort of provision in this second CARES Act, this CARES Act 2 movie that's fixing to come out about allowing states to spend either the money that they have left over or new money they get into in the CARES Act 2 sequel.
I like that. I think we're going to take that. We're going to start talking about the sequel. If you loved CARES Act 1, just wait for the bad capillarity of CARES Act 2.
Coming to Netflix near you.
I like it, David. That's good. Appreciate the call, man. Let's get... leaves the phone line open at 343-0106. I'm sorry, you hear me doing that. That's me trying to read and talk at the same time. So Chris, thank you, Chris, said avoid 65 southbound at Dolphin. So 65 southbound at Dolphin. So I don't know any details on that. Leanna, we might be able to work up with the direct. But, you know, Chris is giving the pertinent that there's obviously an accident, something there that has traffic slowed down. We could probably, if we get the old Vortex binoculars out the truck, that same pickup truck. We can probably glass that and tell you what's going on up there. All right, Dan says, that's all capitalized. So how, because you're supposed to be loud. SARS-CoV-1 appeared in 2003 during the Bush administration. Please correct Mr. Preston. Well, Dan, you did it. Y'all deal with that. I'd love to have, you know what, we got, should have a forum. That's what we need. We need another thing to try to wrangle here, Leanna, but have a forum. And when people want to, like, often we become, like, I become a surrogate to one person to correct another. Just go to the forum, take your issues up at the forum. Hey, on this vaccine distribution question, I'd asked it this morning and got some interesting commentary on this. You heard Congressman Byrne mention it as well. And yeah, let's say you are, you're governor of any state, USA. Okay, so you have the say-so to the implementation on this. You don't have enough vaccine to go around at first. So it's kind of like reality. And you have, let's say, out of the pool of people that would be defined as frontline healthcare workers and people with underlying conditions and the most needy elderly folks in facilities that need it. So you have 100,000 total people, those two groups combined, all those people combined. You have 100,000. And for the sake of this discussion, you're going to get 20,000. Well, you get 40,000 doses, which means 20,000 people can be given the vaccine. How do you distribute that? I think you can make a very fair argument and a logical argument about giving them to frontline healthcare workers. But then again, realize the politics of that, because a lot of those frontline healthcare workers are young people, right? That could get COVID and they're sick for a week or so, then they're back at work. You know, they just get over it. It's not, it doesn't have the chance of killing them. So then you could make this emotional argument. Well, they should be given to the people that are, most susceptible to this. Which group do you give it to? I mean, it's a fair question, because logically, I think you do the best good with having frontline healthcare workers, and I agree with the congressman on that aren't scared to go to work, and they're younger people. They know they're not going to you know, they're not going to die from it, but they could get it and spread it and all those kind of things, and those, or get sick and just not, you know, not be able to be at work for 14 days or more. So, but then don't you know that there are families here? I can understand that emotional plea as well that says, hey, wait a second, you're giving it to, you know, Nurse Sullivan over there, and Nurse Sullivan is not going to die if he gets this. Nurse Sullivan's going to be out of work. I've got, you know, Aunt Margaret over here. Aunt Margaret, if she gets it, is going to die. So you're going to choose to give this to somebody who won't die from it versus giving the vaccine to my Aunt Margaret who will die. I think we will hear this discussion going forward probably in the, I don't know, we get, said, what's our delivery, the 16th or something, those 40,000 vaccines should arrive in Alabama and most other states. I don't know how, what the deficit will be in total number of vaccines needed in those other states, but I think you'll start hearing these arguments happening maybe around Christmas time, maybe between Christmas and New Year's somewhere, as there'll be groups out there saying, hey, what about us? What about my group? What about, you know, my loved ones? To heck with those whippersnappers and, you know, in nursing or physicians. What about my loved ones? All right. Is this an addition, Leanna, or is this all right. Okay. So it's a wreck. This is sad news coming in here. What we're getting, that wreck that I think Chris was talking about, 65 southbound, is in between airport right here by our studios and just south of us, the Cottage Hill, where Cottage Hill goes under 65. It says a fatality wreck there. So a two fatality wreck. Wow. Two fatality wrecks, 65 southbound between airport and Cottage Hill. Say a prayer for those families right now. We'll let you know more on this, but know this is going to be a traffic issue for you right now. Southbound 65, so this is backed up, I guess, to, from what Chris was saying, as far up as Dolphin Street Interchange, but the accident somewhere between right here by our studios at airport and Cottage Hill. Get to the latest on that, but right now 65 southbound. Traffic issue. If you take an alternate route, please do. All right, coming right back, and reminder here too, and we'll give you some of the details. We're closing in on your chance to win $6,600 worth of prizes in our Naughty or Nice Christmas contest. One of y'all is going to win. I'll give you details on how to get signed up, and hopefully you'll be the one that wins. We'll do that when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:50, y'all. You know, on Midday Mobile. Yeah, just to run through here quickly, because the, like sands through the hourglass, so are the hours of this contest or something like that. Hey, it's last week and a half of our FM Talk 106.5 Naughty or Nice Christmas contest prize package at over $6,600. That would be $6,600, and one of y'all is going to win the whole thing. Grand prize features a Tyler gift basket from Beckham's Florist and Gifts, a queen-size Tempur-Pedic mattress from Good Morning Mattress in Mobile. Enjoyed visiting with those folks a couple weeks ago. Nice people right there at Hillcrest and Airport. Boss Buck feeder. I like those. Got a couple of those. And Loophole binoculars from G&D Feed, Farm Feed and Outdoors. So big thank you to Lee and Starla and the gang there. Diamond by the Yard necklace from the Carrot Patch. Beautiful. Husqvarna Weed Eater Edger Combo from Robertsdale Power Equipment. A Generac generator from Spring Hill Ace Hardware, where they see my face about every week at that, and a beautiful fountain, plus the installation from Weatherford's Fountain and Lawn. All that together, over $6,600 in prizes going to one of y'all. What you got to do is get registered. If you have not yet, you stop by our participating sponsor and make sure to get signed up at Beckham's Florist and Gifts, Good Morning Mattress, G&T Farm Feed and Outdoors, Carrot Patch Jewelers, Robertsdale Power Equipment, Spring Hill Ace Hardware, Weatherford's Fountain and Lawn. Drop your name in there. Plus, you can visit their Facebook page and get another entry as well. It will do the drawing coming up on the 18th here, and one of y'all is going to win the whole thing. So good luck, and make sure you get in on that. We talked about this a second ago. We're talking about businesses closing and the questions surrounding, you know, Look at California, look at Alabama. Congressman Byrne talked about the unemployment rate difference between Alabama and New York State, for example, right? Well, listen to this. Here's just some real numbers. So it's from Yahoo Finance, and they said, as of, I guess that's today, the National Restaurant Association sent a letter to congressional leadership sharing new survey findings that illustrated continued business deterioration across the restaurant industry and offering support for the moderate compromise proposal as a down payment towards a larger relief package in early 2021. All right. Here are the stats they rolled out. National Restaurant Association did this. But so you understand it has some lean to it. But, I mean, numbers are numbers most likely here. National Restaurant Association Research Group conducted a survey of 6,000 restaurant operators and 250 supply chain businesses. This ran from November 17th through the 30th. Here's what the findings were. 87% of full-service restaurants, independent, chain, and franchise reported an average 36% drop in sales revenue for an industry with an average profit margin of 5 to 6%. And they go on to say this is simply unsustainable. I'd say 83% of the full service operators expect sales to be even worse over the next 3 months. Although sales are significantly lower for most independent and franchise owners, their costs have not fallen by a proportional level. 59% of operators say their total labor costs as a percentage of sales are higher than they were pre-pandemic. This goes into what we're talking about, right? How much money it takes to get somebody to come back to work. Okay. They said here, it goes on, this is the narrative portion from the National Restaurant Association. So the tide of restaurant closures and bankruptcies continues to rise, sweeping away some jobs of the most venerated independent and chain restaurants. As of today, 17% of restaurants, more than 110,000 establishments, are closed permanently or long term. That's their stat there. A vast majority of permanently closed restaurants were well-established businesses and fixtures in their communities. On average, these restaurants had been in business for 16 years. Wow. And 16% of those had been open for at least 30 years. Now, I don't know the restaurant business, but I know people that do. And what I've heard over the years is those first few years for a restaurant, that's the real challenge, right? That's a real challenge to see if you have a brand, things people want, those kind of things. Okay. It says here, now, in these stats, that on average, restaurants had been in business for 16 years. Out of the 110,000 establishments closed, had been in business for 16 years, and 16% of those had been open at least 30 years. Wow. Only 48% of these former restaurant owners say it's likely they'll remain in the industry in any form in the months or years ahead. See, I worry about this. If we're going to get things turned around, if the vaccine is all it's purported to be, maybe Washington, you know, if they're spending money on everything out here, maybe trying to get these restaurants to bridge the gap here through PPP. I mean, that's why this is important, that they're going to get maybe something done in Washington right now. Is that shocking to you? I mean, you can look around and see some of it, but 110,000, not that are scaling back, or it says, as of today, 17% of restaurants, more than 110,000 establishments closed permanently or long-term. I don't know what long-term means, but I do know permanently. And the fact is, it wasn't like, you know, if you had just started a restaurant or some kind of concept when the pandemic hit, holy cow. That is a tough hand to be dealt right there. But according to this, we're talking about restaurants that have been open 16 years, 30 years. Yeah, I would agree that the market had said they like what those people had to offer. Scary. And you know, where do you come back from that? At least here in the state of Alabama, I'd like to look at those numbers state by state. I think maybe better here in the state of Alabama, where we have at least opened up, you know, to some degree, but still you have restaurateurs having to use half capacity. When you saw that stat that the margin's 5 or 6% and they got to go half capacity at their restaurant. What does a restaurant in California or something like that do? You know, I think looks like they're going out of business. Governor Ivey has said and doubled down on this a couple weeks ago that she would not go back to a business closure in the state of Alabama. That's good news, but it's not good news. I think if you live in a California and some other states are talking about doing the same thing. So there you go. That's I thought it was just telling. And you might see that number and say, oh, well, that's a bunch of brand new restaurants that shut down because of it. No, it sounds like some people that are been doing it for quite a while. Oh, you heard it coming up next hour. We can talk about this, too. I mentioned it with Congressman Byrne about that bill, the Tiger King bill. That's what they're calling it in Washington. U.S. House passed a bill that prohibits people from owning big cats. I think they mean like lions and tigers and mountain lions and those things. Because, I mean, I don't think just big house cats. But we'll talk about what they were working on here with their Tiger King bill in the House of Representatives when we return.